I would like to welcome to the club our most recent Patreon supporter, Danielle O. As a patron, you get access to ad-free episodes and monthly patron-only content. If you're interested in supporting the show, head to patreon.com/tcfcpod.
Explicit content is found in this episode. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to the True Crime Fan Club Podcast. I'm your host, Lainey. Elias Abulazam held a knife tightly in his hand, waiting for his next victim. Up until this point, he had stabbed over 5 people. Many of them he left for dead. Some would say his slashings were motivated by race, but there is not enough conclusive evidence to back that up. Instead, this case continues to leave more questions than answers. Okay, on to the show. Elias Abulazam was born on August 28, 1976, in central Israel. He lived a comfortable life with his Christian Arab family in the city of Ramia. The people of Elias's hometown did not have good things to say about him. They described a man who did drugs, got into fights, and had very unsteady employment. This Elias was very different than the one described by those who knew him in the U.S. In 1995, Elias moved to the United States. According to Israeli media after his arrest, Elias left Israel at 20 due to arrest for drugs and violence. He had a green card but never became a U.S. citizen. Elias settled in Virginia, where he worked as a mental health technician at Piedmont Behavioral Center in Leesburg, Virginia. At Piedmont, Elias worked with troubled children. His co-workers described Elias as a gentle giant who displayed remarkable patience and restraint when dealing with mentally unstable and violent teenagers. They would often marvel at how he would be able to talk and diffuse most situations when it would be easy for the 6-foot, 5-inch, 280-pound man to physically subdue the child. In 1997, Elias married Dawn Costello. The couple officially separated in 2000 and were divorced in 2002. Not much is known about their marriage. On July 30, 2004, Elias married Jessica Hirth. The couple met in Texas while Elias was visiting cousins. After he was arrested for his crimes, Elias's former in-laws would say that they were shocked by his arrest. They had always viewed him as a very nice man. Despite how nice he seemed to be, Elias and Jessica divorced in 2007 due to Elias's verbal and physical abuse towards his wife. Like much of his life before his crimes, not much is known about Elias's time in Virginia after his divorce and before he moved to Michigan. But that move to Michigan would reveal a terribly violent man. On May 22, 2010, Elias moved to a home in Flint that was owned by his uncle. His uncle would also get him a job at a nearby liquor store. On May 24, 2010, 2 days after Elias arrived in Michigan, police were called at 6 o'clock a.m. for a man down in a yard near Leith and Dexter Streets in Flint. The man, later identified as 31-year-old David Motley, was stabbed and died at the scene. There were no witnesses to the crime, but police would soon realize that this would be the beginning of a spree that would leave an additional 4 men dead and 13 more injured. Almost a month later, on June 21st, 59-year-old Emmanuel Abdul Muhammad was found stabbed to death around 2 a.m. near Avenue B and Wood Street in Flint. Muhammad was a native of Union Springs, Alabama, but attended schools in Flint. He graduated from Flint Northern High School in 1969, where he played football. No one saw the attack on Muhammad, and his case went cold until it would be tied with later attacks. On June 26, 42-year-old Bill Fisher was attacked around 5:50 a.m. on Pearson Road. This would be Elias's first victim that would be left alive and give police their first leads in the case. Bill would later testify against Elias and identify him as the man who stabbed him. Bill was waiting for the bus when Elias asked him for help checking the hot engine on his Chevy Blazer. Bill testified, quote, "I tell him to pull the latch. He came so fast, I had a dagger in my stomach." After being stabbed, Bill scrambled to a nearby apartment building and pushed buttons, hoping that someone would respond and call 911. Elias fled the scene. On July 12th, Antoine Jackson, then 29 years old, was stabbed at around 1:30 a.m. near Saginaw Street and Maple Road in Burton, a suburb of Flint. Witnesses found Antoine rolling around the grass and called for help. Police and paramedics were dispatched, and Antoine was taken to the hospital with multiple stab wounds. Luckily, Antoine survived his attack. On July 19th at 12:15 a.m., a man asked Richard Booker for help opening his car hood. Richard was walking near North Saginaw and Julia Avenue in Genesee Township, a neighboring city of Flint. As Richard approached the man to help, he was stabbed 5 times. The 49-year-old man survived the attack but spent 3 weeks in the hospital recovering. Richard needed 68 staples throughout his back and stomach to close his wounds. He also had slash marks across his arms. When interviewed after his attack, Richard said the slash wounds came when he tried to keep his attacker from cutting off his face. Richard added, quote, "I've never hurt so much in my life, never come so close to death." Richard was the only of Elias's victims who was white. 4 days after the attack on Richard, an unidentified 21-year-old man was stabbed at around 5:45 a.m. on University Avenue near King Avenue. There is no additional information about this incident. On July 26th, 43-year-old Darwin Marshall was found stabbed to death around 1:25 a.m. on Garland Street near West 5th Avenue in Flint. Darwin was a 1985 graduate of Flint Northern High School. After graduation, he served 4 years in the U.S. Army. He then returned to Flint and worked odd jobs for the next 20 years. His mother would tell media that Darwin loved to play dominoes and cards. Velma Marshall, his mother, would also say her son had the voice of an angel. On July 27th, Antoine Marshall, then 26 years old, was attacked around 3 a.m. near Pearson and Fleming. Antoine was stabbed 6 times in the stomach and chest, but survived the attack. Antoine would later testify that he was approached by Elias, who asked him for help opening the hood of a Chevy Blazer. As Antoine walked around the vehicle, he began to have an uneasy feeling. Antoine said, quote, "I started to ease away. Something in my mind told me to ease away. When I tried to ease away, that's when he stabbed me." 20-year-old Devon Rawls was stabbed on July 29th around 3:30 a.m. at Leith and Cook Streets. Elias asked Devon for directions towards a liquor store. He then jumped out of his vehicle and lunged towards Devon, stabbing him. Devon tried to run, but tripped and was then pounced on by Elias. Elias then fled, and Devon was able to get help. Later that same day, perhaps upset with the way the attack on Devon went, Elias stabbed a 59-year-old man around 6 a.m. near Saginaw and 12th Streets. Not much is known about the incident other than the victim survived the attack. Elias's attacks, once weeks apart, were now coming more and more frequently. On July 30th, 60-year-old Frank Kellybrew was stabbed to death around 3:30 a.m. near the Hometown Inn on Miller Road in Flint Township. A passerby called police after seeing Frank's body lying in front of the Flint Township restaurant next door to the inn. The manager of the inn would later say that Frank was a good guy who would joke and drink coffee with a small group of acquaintances at the motel. Frank had been living at the Hometown Inn since the previous September and was a retired General Motors employee. Frank's murder was being investigated by Flint Township Police Detective Randy Kimes. Randy initially thought this was another act of senseless violence. Later that same day, a 28-year-old man was stabbed at around 6 a.m. on South Saginaw Street near West 2nd Street. The victim survived this attack. The next day, August 1st, 18-year-old Etwan Wilson was walking alone when he was attacked about 2:30 a.m. near Pearson and Basil in Flint. Etwan stated that a large man in a green over gold SUV was pulled over. The man motioned for Etwan to come over to the vehicle and asked for directions. When Etwan obliged, the man pounced on him and stabbed him several times in the stomach. Etwan managed to get away and was taken to the hospital. When Etwan was interviewed a year after his attack, he said he still felt physical pain as well as continued mental distress. Etwan shared his story with WXYZ-TV Detroit, Channel 7.
Michigan State Police are now a part of the manhunt for that serial killer, but we were there when that 17-year-old got out of the hospital tonight, and only on 7 he shares his story. His trust is shattered, his body battered, but he says now he's on a mission from God.
The pain ain't really nothing compared to me living and breathing.
There are staples now running the length of 17-year-old Etwan Wilson's torso.
This is where he stabbed me.
He had open-heart surgery to pinpoint all the damage done when Etwan became another victim of this man, now known as the Flint area serial killer.
He stabbed me once, but when he stabbed me, he pulled up and he went upward and caught three of my organs, my major organ, my heart, liver, and my diaphragm.
Etwan says the killer pulled over near him, pretended to use a cell phone, then walked up close and asked him, where is Pearson Road? After Etwan gave him directions,
he said, okay, thank you. And by that time, he was pretty close, about this far apart, and he just jumped at me, caught me one time. I just pushed off of him and ran. Ran to the first house I seen with a light on. God bless that they opened the door for me.
Etwan helped police create this sketch now seen around the nation. He's helping see to it this man is brought to justice.
I just pray that it don't happen to nobody else. You know, I'm glad I was the one to live and get to tell everybody about it.
And Etwan has a young son that he says when he gets old enough, he'll be having serious conversations with about strangers. But this evening, and until this man is caught, he'll be staying with his father in Detroit.
On August 2nd, 49-year-old Arnold Miner was found dead at about 2:30 a.m. on South Saginaw Street near Barton Street in Flint. Arnold was walking home from his mother's house and was killed less than a mile from his home. Arnold's sister offered him a ride, but Arnold declined. Well, what exactly Elias did to win Arnold's trust is unknown. His sister would later tell media that her brother would have helped out anyone and would have been an easy target for Elias's method of disarming his victims. Detective Kimes, who was also investigating Frank Kellybrew's murder just 2 days before, heard about Arnold's murder and went to check out the crime scene on a hunch. Detective Kimes immediately saw the similarities between the two murders. He said of the scene, quote, "It appeared that somebody was walking down the roadway, had been assaulted, and then tried to run away. The fact that neither victim had been robbed of their wallets, right away that raises your suspicions. The time of day, early in the morning and late at night, was also the same." Detective Kimes was shocked to hear that this was the fourth fatal stabbing since May 24th. On August 4th, police in Genesee County, Michigan, announced what many citizens probably already knew. The series of stabbings were the work of one man. There were too many similarities between the attacks to attribute them to different people. The citizens of Flint and its surrounding cities were now on high alert. They couldn't have known at the time that they were going to be given a temporary reprieve while Elias was visiting relatives in Virginia. On August 3rd, 15-year-old Anthony Cage was taking a nighttime jog in Leesburg, Virginia, when he was stabbed in the back. Anthony needed surgery but survived his wounds. Anthony would testify that he jogged at night to avoid the heat. As he was running, an SUV passed him, stopped, and the driver got out. Anthony said, quote, "So I just pass him up, look at him out of the corner of my eye. He was wearing a baseball cap. And just seconds after that, I feel a jab, and I see him running back, so I was like, was he trying to mug me or something? But when I touched my back where he hit me, I felt a huge wet spot. I kind of went into panic mode, started running to the intersection, trying to flag down people, but nobody stopped. Anthony then went to a Sunoco station where the attendant called 911. There just so happened to be an army medic at the station, and they provided medical attention until the ambulance could arrive. On August 5th, Elias was stopped by police in Arlington, Virginia for running a stop sign. When the police conducted a background check, they saw Elias was wanted on a misdemeanor assault charge stemming from an incident with his former brother-in-law. While he was being booked and placed in a holding cell, police impounded his car. While conducting a search, police found a knife in the driver's side door and a hammer. These two weapons would be later linked to the attacks Elias would later commit in Virginia. The weapons and car were returned to Elias after he was released. Earlier that same day, a 67-year-old man was stabbed at 6 o'clock a.m. in Leesburg. The next day, a man would be attacked and struck on the head with a hammer. Additional details about these two attacks are unknown. Elias's last attack would come on August 7th, when he would stab 59-year-old Tony Leno outside a Toledo, Ohio church. Tony, a custodian, was standing outside the church for a cigarette break when Elias pulled up to him in his Chevy Blazer and asked for directions. As Tony pointed the way, Elias jumped out of his vehicle, stabbed Tony twice in the stomach, then got back in his vehicle and drove away. Tony survived the attack. I'm going to pause the case right here so you can hear a word from our sponsors. Magellan TV is a new type of documentary streaming provider determined to bring you the finest documentaries from around the globe. New programs are added on a weekly basis, and your faves can be watched anytime, anywhere on your television, laptop, or mobile device. Featured genres include true crime, history, science, space, and nature. My favorite genre thus far has been the crime and mystery genre. I just started a show called Murder on the Internet that talks a lot about people going and dating on the internet and how sometimes that can be dangerous. And honestly, I'm so glad that Magellan TV makes their content so accessible because I cannot wait for a new episode. This collection of documentaries evoke curiosity, emotion, and fear about some of the darkest mysteries of all times. Explore the human and social dimensions of crime in some of the most intriguing true crime documentaries produced. To start your exclusive 2-month free trial today, go to MagellanTV.com/TrueCrimeFanClub. That's MagellanTV.com/TrueCrimeFanClub to start your 2-month free trial today. Okay. Squirt has been on the Puppo plan for over a month now, and I am so glad and thankful that they deliver his food right to my door. They make great pet parenting easier by taking the guesswork out of choosing the right food for your dog. A large, small, long, tall, couch potato, or mountain climber dog, every dog is unique, and so are their dietary needs. They also keep it clean with real meat and without fillers, so your dog and Squirt get their ideal blend of protein, fiber, vitamins, and minerals with zero junk. With their smart auto delivery system, you won't ever have piles of food stacking up in the pantry. You'll always get the freshest food for your pup. Squirt has a chicken and brown rice formula that he absolutely loves, and if he had it his way, he'd definitely ask for a second helping. He also seems to know that his cute little picture is on the bag too, which is absolutely adorable, but of course, I'm biased. Visit puppo.com/TCFC to get 14 days of personalized dog food delivered for only $9. That's puppo.com/TCFC to get 14 days for only $9. On August 9th, police in Leesburg, Virginia, concluded that the three stabbings were the work of one man based on the victim's descriptions of the suspect and his car, as well as the MO he employed. Like he did in Michigan, Elias would target African-American men who were alone and would ask them an innocent question before attacking them. As a listener side note, Elias's method of attack remind me a lot of Ted Bundy, and I have a feeling you'll think this too. On the same day in Michigan, the Genesee County Police launched a task force to find the man behind the stabbings that had been happening all summer long. It was at this time that the Toledo Police Department realized that their August 7 stabbing was exactly like the stabbings that were occurring in Flint. These two cities are only 109 miles or 175 kilometers from each other.
Good afternoon and welcome. Citizens of this community have been the victims of a series of unprovoked attacks and assaults. These assaults may be related. To coordinate the investigation of these assaults, a task force of Genesee County law enforcement agencies has been established and committed their full resources. This task force is being led by the Michigan State Police and includes members. Each one of these jurisdictions has had an assault or homicide within its borders. Also representing the city of Flint today is its mayor, Dane Walling. The office of the Genesee County Sheriff, which obviously represents the entire county, joins the task force. Captain Chris Swanson, representing the Sheriff's Department, is here with us today. 14 investigators are assigned full-time. Additional agencies have also offered resources on an as-needed basis, including the Federal Bureau of Investigation. This task force has thus far followed up on approximately 175 tips as of 3 o'clock this afternoon. Each of those tips is generating new leads. These tips are being entered into a computerized system for categorizing, review, and assignment to officers in the field. After the task force review, we now believe there are 15 stabbings potentially attributed to the same suspect. 5 stabbings have been fatal. The first assault occurred on May 24th in the city of Flint, and the most recent was August 2nd, also in the city of Flint. These stabbings have been taking place during the early morning hour, and the victims have been on foot and approached by the suspect from his vehicle. Oftentimes, the suspect is asking for directions or assistance. The victims to date have been both African American and white, and range in age from 17 to 60 years of age. They have been short, they have been tall, some have been slim, some have been stocky. All victims to date have been male. Connections between these stabbings were not readily apparent to law enforcement due to the timing of the assaults, the death of some victims, and the absence of witnesses. Additionally, once the assaults cross jurisdictional boundaries, connection of any one assault to another was made more difficult. It's important to note that a gap of almost 1 month existed between the first and second stabbings. The first two assaults were fatal. No witnesses have been located to those crimes. It was not until June 26th that law enforcement encountered a surviving victim from whom information could be obtained. Some victims made no police report, and a pattern did not begin to emerge until late July. For this reason, the task force was developed. It was through this follow-up investigation that law enforcement was able to determine that there was a potential connection between all or some of these attacks. As of today, a composite has been prepared with the input of 2 of the surviving victims, which was distributed to the public on August the 6th. The suspect is believed to be a white male in his late 20s or early 30s, standing 5'11", up to 6'2" tall, being approximately 180 to 200 pounds. He may have light-colored hair. He usually wears a baseball cap during his attacks. Note that he may wear a metal rod-style piercing in his upper left ear. Additionally, this morning, law enforcement was able to release a description of a vehicle they believe may be involved, described as a Chevrolet Blazer or a GMC Jimny-type vehicle, likely model year ranging from 1995 to 2005, described as a two-tone green over beige or gold, and it's a four-door vehicle. A tip line has been established so that the task force can coordinate all tips that the public may have. If you have information, I'm speaking now directly to the public, if you have information that you believe could help the task force identify the person responsible for these attacks, or if you have information about similar attacks that you believe may have gone unreported, please call the tip line. That number is 866-246-9500. 866-246-9500. It's a toll-free call. You can call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I'm imploring the community to come forward with any and all information that you may have to assist the task force in solving these crimes. The task force is working around the clock to identify this person, and they will not stop until he is arrested and brought to justice. I want to reassure the public, this individual will be apprehended. Investigators will not rest until this person is in custody. Thank you.
Police knew they would need the help of the public in order to solve this case. They turned to the local news media and gave the public a description of their suspect, along with his vehicle and crime MO. Tips poured in, but it was tip number 314 that would lead to a break in the case. A woman who was watching the news thought the suspect looked like a man her father worked with named Elias Abuelazam. Police looked into the tip and saw all the consistencies between the attacks and Elias's whereabouts and work schedules. On August 11th, Elias was arrested by U.S. Customs and Border Protection at the Atlanta airport. He was only 15 minutes away from boarding an airplane bound for Tel Aviv. His $3,000 plane ticket was purchased by his uncle. After his arrest, Elias didn't fight extradition to Michigan, and he went back to the state to answer for his crimes. His three-month reign of terror was over. Elias was initially charged with 3 open counts of murder and 6 counts of assault with attempt to murder. He was represented by lawyers Brian Mortlett and Edward Zenny. While awaiting trial, Elias was held in solitary confinement, one of only 13 inmates in the jail to be held this way. He was locked in his 8-foot by 13-foot cell 23 hours a day, with 1 hour to speak to his lawyers, see a doctor, or stretch his legs between the solitary confinement cells. He would also be checked on by guards every 15 minutes. Elias's time in jail was not uneventful. Another inmate tried to harm Elias by poisoning his food. Elias also assaulted an officer. In September 2010, prosecutors decide to move forward with just the open count of murder against Arnold Miner. They would set aside all other charges for now and revisit them later. Despite not having to stand trial for the other crimes, victim testimony and descriptions of the other murders were ruled admissible by the judge. The trial began on May 8, 2012. Prosecutors' key pieces of evidence were Arnold's blood on a pair of pants in Elias's luggage, as well as in his truck. Video from a nearby party store also caught footage of a vehicle matching Elias's in the same area during the time of the murder. Prosecutors would end up calling 50 witnesses, including the other men who were attacked by Elias. The defense would pounce on the fact that the witnesses had varying descriptions of the man who stabbed them, but ultimately, their testimonies were very compelling. 1 week later, on May 15th, the prosecution rested. The defense's strategy was to paint Elias as someone who was insane while he committed the crimes. They brought up the fact that Elias attempted suicide in 1997 and that he was diagnosed as psychotic by an Israeli psychologist in 2009. But their star witness was a psychiatrist hired by the defense that claimed Elias suffered from paranoid schizophrenia. Dr. Norman S. Miller testified that he evaluated Elias twice in 2011. Dr. Miller testified that Elias heard voices that urged him to attack the men, and he was powerless to resist them. It was three delusions, along with Elias's frequent moves, being a poor student in school, and two divorces that led Dr. Miller to his diagnosis. Dr. Miller would be the only witness the defense would call to the stand. The prosecution called three expert rebuttal witnesses that testified while Elias may have a personality disorder and lack of empathy, he was sane at the time of his crimes. Proof of that would be that Elias lulled his victims into a false sense of security before attacking, as well as the steps he took to avoid capture. The prosecution also attacked Dr. Miller by asserting he asked Elias leading questions such as, "Is it your thought that the evil force did this?" They also revealed that Dr. Miller had been paid $6,000 for his testimony and had not testified for the prosecution in 5 years. The prosecution also attacked Dr. Miller's credibility. They asserted that Dr. Miller's expertise was really in alcohol and drug addiction, based on the 200 articles he had written for medical journals. It took the jury only 2 hours and 23 minutes to convict Elias of the murder of Arnold Miner. He was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. After his conviction, a judge dismissed the 10 other pending charges against Elias. They could be reissued if needed, but the prosecution wanted to spare the families additional pain and the taxpayers additional costs. Things have not been quiet for Elias since he has been in jail. In November 2010, he was arraigned on 5 counts of assaulting a police officer after attacking a prison guard. In June 2014, Elias's conviction was upheld. 2 months later, he sued the federal government to be returned to Israel. In 2009, before he even came to Flint, Elias had stabbed a friend in Israel. He wanted to go to an Israeli prison, but he was denied. In November 2014, the Michigan Supreme Court declined to hear Elias's appeal. In an unexpected twist, in May 2017, with the agreement that he couldn't be prosecuted for the crime, Elias admitted to killing a former neighbor, Jamie Lane, when he lived in Virginia in 2009. Jamie and Elias had spent several evenings outside of their apartments just talking to each other, having fun, and sharing stories about their life. Jamie was a 44-year-old husband, father, and grandfather at the time of his death. He was found stabbed to death in his home. Up until this point, the murder had been a cold case. Despite having confessed to the attack in Israel and the murder in Virginia, Elias has never offered an explanation for his stabbing spree in the summer of 2010. Some investigators have drawn conclusions based on the fact that 16 of his victims were Black, while one was Hispanic and one was white. Others, however, have refused to claim to understand his motives despite his victims' profiles. Whatever the reason, no cause or motivation for the killings will ever give their families the answers they are looking for. And by all accounts, Elias is just fine holding on to whatever motivated him to become the Flint serial slasher. Okay, fan club members, as I conclude this episode, my one question to you is, how will you sleep tonight? Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podbean, or wherever you listen. It really does help the show out. You can find me on most social media platforms, Twitter, @TCFCPod, facebook.com/TCFC podcast, Instagram, TCFC_podcast, and of course, our website is truecrimefanclub.com. Got an episode request? Send us an email, tcfcpod@gmail.com. This episode was researched and written by Brittany Martinez. Audio engineering and custom music for the show was provided by Nico at We Talk of Dreams. Check him out on Twitter at We Talk of Dreams or WeTalkOfDreams.com.